And welcome back to the program. And our next guest is someone who is trying to move the ball forward in terms of making solar energy more affordable and attainable for residents in his state, which is the state of Maine. Love Maine. He wrote an article that D.R. Tucker, who unfortunately could not join us today, the article was in the Bangor Daily News, asking how can we make solar power affordable, viable, and you know, something that is sustainable. And he said, pay people for it. So wanted to welcome Fred to the program, find out a little bit more about your work, Fred. I understand you're a legislative policy analyst for the Maine Green Independent Party. Didn't even know it existed, but glad to hear it.
Right.
That's apparently one of three political parties in Maine with ballot access. You're a former attorney with a law degree from Bolt, University of California, Berkeley. That's my alma mater. Not Bolt. I wasn't smart enough to go to law school. Or maybe I was too smart to go to law school since I'm married to a recovering lawyer. Berkeley from my undergraduate. And I really am glad to know about you and also to know about what's going on as far as the eco-politics behind a state that I have visited every summer for the last 10 years because my daughter, we're from the Bay Area, has gone to camp in Maine. Like I think everybody in America sends their kids to camp in Maine. It must be the biggest industry. But I've really not ever known much about, you know, the environmental awareness level or what, you know, has taken place there. And so I'm really glad to have a chance to learn more and also to hear what you are trying to do. So, again, thanks for joining us. Before we do launch in, I just want to get your thoughts. In the first segment, we played the entire speech in Warsaw, Poland, by the Philippine representative at the climate conference, Nader Avsanu, who movingly talked about how his community and his country has been impacted, and has not only said, you know, this needs to be the time that we finally take action, this needs to be the conference where the delegates finally move the ball forward, but he and many other delegates are now following in his footsteps and activists around the world in beginning a hunger strike until there is some substantial progress. Pretty moving.
Well, hi, Betsy. That's a lot. I'm glad to be on your show. Thanks for having me. And certainly start off by thinking about the people in the Philippines. It's an awful disaster. My family lived in Japan for a year, so we're familiar with that part of the world, and it's amazing just to see those pictures and to imagine what people over there are going through. And I would say that personally I kind of share that frustration that there's been a long period of inaction on climate change, so I'm not at the point of doing a hunger strike, but certainly I share that frustration. And it's, a lot of people are wondering about the connection between the weather events and climate change, and I think there's a lot of science there still to be done. But in any case, my heart goes out to the people in the Philippines, and I hope everybody can do something to provide assistance and aid to those folks who have been affected.
And since climate change is certainly a global issue, it's you know, not the people who get hit the hardest who cause the problems. It's the opposite. That's one of the, you know, quirks about this challenge, if you can even call it a quirk. And
right,
so
yeah, that's a very good point.
You know, yeah, least afford to have their homes impacted and least afford to recover are the ones who contribute least to the emissions that we spew into the atmosphere. And since we here in America tend to have a heavier, you know, than most, if not all, other countries' footprint, certainly per capita we do, you know, the problem really does have to start being addressed at home. So what are you doing in your home state, Fred, to try to, you know, make, I would imagine, you know, not only representatives in Maine more aware of the climate crisis and, you know, energy options that must be embraced, but also to let the public know what's at stake and what's available in terms of potentially more affordable solar power when we need it most?
Right. Well, so yeah, so I published an article that was printed in the Bangor Daily News, and really I've been following the legislature here. We have an energy committee that last session basically decided to end solar rebates in Maine and study the issue. So this fall they have been doing a series of study committees on renewable energy policy, and the idea is that they're not really sure the best way to encourage solar in Maine, so they're taking some time to hear from people. I attended some of those sessions, and in response, I wrote my editorial. And basically, really, as you pointed out, it's the folks who don't have a lot of money who are being affected the most by climate change. And also, one of the things that it turns out is that the folks who have a lot of money are actually able to take advantage of solar. There's some federal tax credits that are still available But what the Maine program did when we had rebates is it brought solar power and made it affordable to folks who maybe didn't have as much money as others. And so when I looked at what the Maine legislature was doing and we looked at what the potential of solar has for not only solving climate change but also by helping people lower their own power bills, I just really wanted to write an article that asked the question, what can we do to make solar more affordable for people so that more people can be part of the solution and more people can take advantage of this free energy source? And so that's the purpose of that article. And, you know, we're doing a lot of things. Besides writing that article, I also have been working with a lot of people to put on what we're calling climate solutions. And the idea behind this event, it'll happen on March 12th in Augusta, and we'd like to invite everybody in Maine to spend one day to think about ways we can solve the climate crisis. So we've invited the entire legislature. We're inviting politicians of all sorts to come to Augusta and everyday average people to come, and we'd like to have a day in Augusta to really think through what can we do about this problem. So there's a lot of things we're doing in Maine. I'm delighted to hear that your daughter comes to Maine.
And I've been to Augusta. I've even been to the Augusta hospital. I got a splinter once at camp, and they did a nice job of giving me a botulism shot because it was a pretty rusty piece of something I got in me after sitting on my daughter's cabin porch.
Wow. Well, we are the frontier here in Maine. But there's a saying, you know, as Maine goes, so goes the nation. And that's what we're really hoping to do here. We think that we can make some change in Maine. And by doing so, we hope to, you know, spark a revolution across the whole country. And as you pointed out earlier, we're in a great position as Americans. We are relatively much wealthier than other people. We have choices. And so the question now is whether we're going to choose wisely and develop clean energy systems, or whether we're going to continue to, you know, go down the fossil fuel path. So, you know, there's just so much we can do. And then in addition to the stuff I do publicly, privately in my own house, about 10 years ago, we bought an old house in Brunswick, Maine. The house was built in 1828, and it's one of these old houses. It was really drafty, and there were actually two heating systems. It was so hard to heat that the people who had it before us had installed a heating system for the front of the house and a heating system for the back of the house. And when we bought it, we made a plan that we would eventually not burn any fossil fuel at all on our property. And also, I had a dream back then that we could maybe even drive an electric car. And at that time, you really couldn't get electric cars. And this year, we actually managed to achieve our goal. We no longer burn any fossil fuel on our house. We have electric heat. We have solar panels on our roof, and we're driving an electric car. So it's just a great feeling to feel like you've able to, you know, plan this out. It took a long time, a lot of investment, but we did it. And so I'm using my own personal house also as an example to just show people that it's possible. We live in Maine, and we drive, but we don't use any fossil fuel to do that. We don't use any fossil fuel for heating our house, and we don't use any fossil fuel for driving our car.
That's great, Fred, and I'm lucky enough to live in the fairly green neck of the woods that is the San Francisco Bay Area, and there's a lot of hybrid cars around here, a lot of Priuses or Prii, as I call them, and even a lot of fully electric cars now, and not enough, but, you know, some solar panels. But what do you see when you look around you on the highways in Maine? Do you see other people with, you know, cleaner vehicles? You probably take note of that if you're like me. I've driven in Maine, but I can't say that I have done any kind of official survey, so I wouldn't want to guess whether what I saw was representative.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a challenge. I think like 99.9% of our personal transportation is in cars that burn fossil fuel. So I think pretty much like most other parts of the country, there are very few all-electric cars. I have a Nissan Leaf, and we bought it because it was one of the few cars that you can get that doesn't take any fossil fuel. And there, a friend of ours has one. There's about a handful of them, maybe five or six that I know about in Maine. Not a lot.
Five
there
or
are
six
some
in the
people.
Whole state. Wow.
Yeah, and I don't know how many they've sold in Maine, but it's not an enormous number. But you know, the thing that's interesting is that it works for us. We live in, you know, Maine is not the Bay Area. I lived in the Bay Area and I didn't have a car at all, and it's very possible to do that between bicycling
especially in
and BART. Yeah, no kidding. I bicycled to work when I lived there, and I had my girlfriend, now my wife, lived in San Francisco, and so I'd take the BART all the time. And in fact, I think my life was easier without a car. It was just a hassle to try to find parking and all that. But Maine's different. I tried to convince my wife that we could live without a car here, and she said, no way. I mean, even just going to kids' birthday parties, you need a car to drive around. But the Nissan Leaf, even though it has a very limited range, it only can go about 100 miles on a charge, it's still great because we can go to the beach. We can go all around town. I drive from Brunswick down to Portland, which is the big city in Maine. I drive from Brunswick up to Augusta. I can really get around just fine with an all-electric car, and that surprises people because there's this sense that you don't have any choices. And the other thing is heating. Here in Maine, a lot of people buy what's called heating oil. It's this really strange system, but basically a truck shows up and they dump diesel fuel into your basement, and then you burn that. That's how people heat their homes here. About 70% now, I think, are still heated with heating oil. And a lot of people just feel like there's no other options. We don't have natural gas everywhere in Maine, and wood is a real pain to use. But electricity, as it turns out, if you can insulate your house the way we have, then you bring your heating load down low enough that you can actually afford to heat with electricity. And there's now these really great heat pump systems that are available. I mentioned my family lived in Japan, and in Japan, it's all electric heat, and they use heat pumps. And that same technology has now made it over to the United States, and people are now starting to install electric heat using these super efficient heat pumps to deliver it. And so it's a real change. I think people, again, don't realize the options we have. And that's one of the things I want to just help people understand is that we do have options. You can do things even without good public policy, but if we could change the public policy to make it more affordable for people to make these changes, then it would be off to the races and we could really make a dent in the climate change problem.
And getting back to my pet peeve, if we had programs on the radio and television stations across America, broadcast as well as the wonderful internet, we might be able to let people know sooner because, you know, it's wonderful that you're doing your activism in your community and so many are doing it across the country. But it seems to me, given the urgency and the late hour of these crises, especially the mother of all of them, climate change, and what's happening with our shifting energy supply and the, you know, problems therein that we're just learning about to the, you know, fullest extent, that we should have some mainstream media, you know, helping to connect the dots for more Americans. I say that every week on the show. You wouldn't know that, but I just have to put it in wherever I can. Maybe someday somebody will hear and say, gee, yeah, Betsy, the guests you and DR have sure are interesting and positive and informative and full of solutions, and let's share that wisdom with the rest of America, not just keep it to the progressives and the greens. God bless you all of us out there, but, you know, we need to grow that group, or it really won't make a difference, will it? Or not?
Well, absolutely, and you're doing such a great job. I mean, I think this is where it's at. We really have to get the message out. It's wonderful to do something in your own home, and I enjoyed the project. It was really fun. It was successful. I'm living with solar power now, and it's wonderful. But what really makes a difference is getting the message out. So shows like yours are really important. And, you know, if the mainstream media is not going to do it, let's just not watch it. Let's watch the media that's doing the good stuff and is really getting the right message out. And it really is so important, I think, to have a positive message to really help people understand that they, again, do have choices, that we're not stuck with this enormous problem that's just unsolvable. I think part of the problem with climate change is sometimes the way it's framed as this enormous problem, and everybody's guilty and there's nothing we can do about it. And I don't think that's true. It is an enormous problem, but it's a very simple problem when you really boil it down. And that is, we just should stop burning stuff. If you're burning something, just think about it. Why are you doing that, and what choices do you have? And especially with cars now, I mean, the Nissan Leaf, I just have to say, this is an amazing piece of technology. Nissan, as a corporation, invested about $4.5 billion to develop that car. At the same time, Shell Oil Company invested about $5 billion drilling holes in the Arctic looking for more natural, more gas. So it's a choice. You can invest $5 billion and end up with an electric car that everybody can drive, or you can invest $5 billion drilling holes in the ground looking for oil and find nothing. And that's a big choice that big companies are making, but even if you bring that down to your own personal self, you know, how do you get around? What car are you going to buy? How do you heat your house? And there's 7 billion people on the planet. So if every one of us does just a little bit of something, if we all spend just a dollar in the right way, that's $7 billion going towards solutions instead of $7 billion digging us deeper in the hole. So I just really want to point that out to your listeners. And again, I know you do this in your show, but really focusing on the solutions and helping people understand we do have choices and what we do does make a difference. That is the important message to get out, I think. Mm.
Could not agree more. I heard something in this past week. Oh, is it Green Fest? There's a big green festival in San Francisco every year, has been for at least a decade, and I've been going, and it's always inspiring and wonderfully encouraging and great green products, and I actually bought all my holiday gifts from a booth where they were making handbags out of used film, actually film strips from actual movies, you know, from Hollywood.
Wow.
Otherwise would go to the landfill. Not only are they going to hold up forever because it's made out of petroleum, I guess, but it's beautiful. They're gorgeous. And I just love the woman who created them. I'm just going to give her a plug. Her name is Julie Lewis. She started a company 15 years ago when I was doing my Trash Talk radio show called Deja Shoe. She was the first one to use recycled rubber and materials to make shoes, and of course Nike learned from her and Reebok learned from her, so she's well known in the trashy circles that I travel in, and known as a real pioneer in terms of using recycled products in everyday or materials in everyday products. Anyway, she was selling these great handbags and I had a wonderful time, but the downside, what I always come away with, is why is it the usual suspects, even though they get 2,000-3,000 people at Green Fest, and other green festivals have now started across the country in Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles. Should be one in New York. Chicago, for sure, there is. But, you know, it's just the people who get it are the ones who are so passionate and even fanatic, and thank goodness.
Right.
But anyway, what somebody said, I'm sorry, was, we're trying to reach people, like-minded people. This was a panel I actually attended, could have been on the panel and contributed something, but the future of green media is what it's called. It's a wonderful new internet television outlet called Evox, E-V-O-X-X, if everybody wants to check it out. They're really trying to do a job there of, you know, getting green content out there in the form of, you know, pre-produced videos, which is a good place to start. Anyway, the founder of it said, actually, it was Raphael Sabarge, who was an actor in a show called Once Upon a Time. He's affiliated with this new media project. Sorry to go on about this, but what I'm trying to say is he's the one who said we're trying to reach like-minded viewers and not so like-minded. And I thought that's exactly the point, is if we just reach the like-minded, until there's enough of us, it won't make a difference. So that's the challenge, isn't it? You know, how do we reach the rest? How do we reach the mass public who either feels overwhelmed or, you know, not even aware of what's going on and all the choices? Sorry to go on so long.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that was an interesting product you mentioned. I had a store here in town. We sold all sorts of sustainable products, and I love those, you know, all the things made from recycled, this or that. We sold bags made from old sails and a lot of different things, mats made from old lobster rope, and just a really, there's a lot you can do. But the thing about you know, folks who already get it is that it's really important for those of us who get it to lead by example. And I'm always frustrated when I go to a climate change sort of rally or something, and folks are talking about this or that, but then you look at what they're doing in their own lives, and they're not really making the choices that we all need to make. So that's one thing that I just encourage folks. It is great to talk to like-minded people, but it's important to actually do stuff. And solar's now at a point where it's affordable to a lot of people, and if you haven't put solar on your house, I think you should really think about doing that. But the other thing is one of the things we're trying to do with the Green Party here in Maine is we're trying to change the law. We're trying to change the way the whole market is structured. And once we do that, then everybody's on board. If we could, one of the policies that we're thinking about in Maine is called a feed-in tariff. And what that would do is it would make solar affordable, and actually would make you could earn money by putting a solar panel on your house. It's actually the law in California and some other places, but it's not here in Maine yet. And what the effect of that would be, we don't have to convince people about green and about climate change. All we have to convince them about is money, and that's a really powerful motivator. And so that, I think that's where we need to work. Those of us who are you know, worried about climate change, and especially the scientists who are really doing a great job of learning about how the natural world works, we need to translate that into policy so that everybody is on board with the solutions and everybody has the right incentives. I think there's a lot of things going on. You definitely have to have the right message out. You have to have leadership. But then when all is said and done, you're right, we can't just have a few people doing the right thing while everyone else is doing the wrong thing. We have to change the basic rules, put laws into effect that are good for everybody and that actually solve the problem. And that is really what we're trying to do here with the Green Party in Maine, is get involved with the political process and change the rules so that everybody will be better off.
Absolutely. I really do believe, as listeners to this program know, and D.R. Tucker certainly agrees, that, you know, how do you get greener policies? You educate the public, and then they understand what's at stake for themselves, their children, their, you know, communities, their livelihood, their lives, and then we start getting more mass support behind some of these, you know, bills that come up in Congress and get killed, you know, 3 years ago. Partly we are up against the fossil fuel industry and the Koch brothers funding, you know, the opposition and the obfuscation campaign. But I really do think that part of the problem is most Americans are just not aware of what's going on because they're not seeing it in mass media outlets where they perhaps tune in every day. And I think, the catalyst that would then get more people to vote for, you know, politicians who get it, to demand and buy more green products. So, again, I really think this is the missing piece, is having some mainstay in mainstream media. And I'll say it to my grave. I'll say it till I turn green in the face. I do believe that's the missing piece. And for the life of me, I cannot get one mainstream media gatekeeper or programmer to take a chance on something as controversial and marginal as our life support system, the environment, climate change. But, okay, I'll get off my high horse. You mentioned lobster rope being turned into doormats. I chuckled because I wrote a whole piece on that for the Huffington Post a few Earth Days ago when the best that one of the morning shows that I watch could come up with as an Earth Day feature was, you know, products made from, you know, recycled content, like doormats made from lobster rope. I thought, that's great, but this is the kind of Earth Day feature that I've been seeing for decades. You know, why don't we talk about something a little more substantive, like what we can do to reduce our energy footprint or, you know, address climate change? And it's just those feel-good stories and products, and God love them. I'm not putting them down in any way, but it's just got to go beyond recycling, right? I'm sure you agree.
Yeah, well, that was an interesting thing. And in my store, we had a lot of different products. And, you know, you sell products based on what people want, not based on what's good for them. So I do think there's room for things like the you know, doormats made from lobster rope. That's a great sort of entry point because at least people are thinking about it. You know, they're trying to make a symbolic act, and it makes them feel good. And then we need more. We absolutely need more. But I think
it's to
help people feel good about what they're doing, to get them thinking about the bigger issues. And so I definitely think there's a place for that. It's a good start. And then once you talk to somebody about that one thing, about recycling, maybe you can get them to compost, and then you can get them to eat organic food. And, you know, it's just like a gateway drug, I guess, is what I would say, a gateway to a better place.
But I do want to get
back to this idea of mainstream media and politics. And, you know, it's one thing to vote for candidates that you think are going to do a good job, but what's really important for people to do is pay attention to what your politicians actually do. And that's really why I've gotten involved with the Green Party, is because we have a lot of people who are elected on environmental promises in the Democratic Party. And they'll say all sorts of great things, but when push comes to shove, they're not standing up for us. They're not doing the right thing. And this feed-in tariff bill is a case in point. We could get it through if all the Democrats would come on board with us, but they're not doing it. And so,
you think they're not doing it because they don't think their constituents want it? You think that's a factor, Fred?
It's a complicated thing. It's a very complicated thing. But what's happened is that the Democratic Party has moved so far into the corporate world that they're now find it difficult to do anything that jeopardizes the profits of the fossil fuel industry. And so you have capture. I mean, this is, you know, again, I went to law school and we really studied this, but what happens when you sort of have this vacuum, the Republican Party is imploding and has become so far away from the mainstream that there's not a lot of room in the center right for Republicans to operate. They have to operate in the very far right. And the Democrats, in order to lock in their majority and really dominate the politics the way they are now, they've dominated the Maine politics for 30 years. They were surprised in the last couple of elections, but they've really run the show in Maine for a long time. So they've basically broadened their sort of base to include the fossil fuel interests, and so they and also in our case they the utilities, and so they just find it very persuasive when they hear from a fossil fuel lobbyist that this is bad for the economy. A Democratic lawmaker gets conflicted and is not necessarily standing up for the people and the planet, but they're really thinking about corporate profits as well. And I think that's driving a lot of our problems nationally and here in Maine is this identification with corporate profits. And, you know, in the past, it used to be Republican Party was really focused on corporate profits, but now the Democratic Party also identifies with corporate profits. And the system, if the system were set up properly, you couldn't make profits by damaging the planet or by making people sick. But unfortunately,
Fred, our system is set up. You are singing our tune. We're out of time, but I encourage you to go to thegreenfront.com and look through all the archives. Also, listen to PRN.FM. Awesome. You will find lots of conversations about these very issues, and I thank you for adding your voice and your commitment.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
We
really
need to raise the volume now. Okay.
All right.
That does it for this edition of The Green Front. By the way, if you heard me talking about those fabulous handbags made from old film, we're going to have Julie Lewis on the show soon. She calls them Deja Bags. I really think she should call them Deja Vu, V-I-E-U. That does it for The Green Front. See you next time. Have a great green week.